Who would have thought it? Tyson Fury beats Klitschko last weekend. Gary Neville is off to Spain. The Ballon d'Or top three is announced, and we've got plenty more coming here on the 20-minute hit for you this week. I'm Ollie Wilson, sports commentator and broadcaster at various outlets around the globe. Once again, bringing you some of the fastest talking action that you can find on iTunes and around the world wide web. We've got a massive five topics to break down with you today, so we're going to dive straight into it. As always, Mr. Paul McDonald is joining me today. Paul, pleasure to have you back on board again, mate. How are you in Australia? Getting a bit of sun, I take it?
Not bad, mate. Absolutely no idea what time of day it is in any other part of the world, but all good.
Excellent. I'm glad you're all over the place. And joining us today on the show as well is a very good friend of mine, Daily Mail's finest football journalist. It is Mr. Sammy Mockbell. Sammy, how you doing, mate?
How are you, mate?
I'm very well. Very well indeed. Sammy's joining us on the line and giving us all of his footballing insights, and we'll kick things off with the beautiful game itself. And gents, let's talk a little bit of English managers going abroad, because Gary Neville is now taking this almost interim role, going across to Spain to join his brother at Valencia, a side that are struggling at the moment. In general, gents, do we see this as a positive for English football, English managers going abroad? There's a history of success, particularly with English managers going to Spain. Can Gary Neville be another success story out in La Liga, Sammy?
I think so. It's a brave appointment by Valencia. I think it, from a journalism sense, it came completely out of the blue. I don't think any of the boys on the nationals had a sniff of the story. So when it broke yesterday, we were all kind of all hands to the pump and trying to find out as much information as we can. But I think it's certainly an interesting appointment. Put it that way. He lacks sort of hands-on managerial experience. Yes, he's worked with England. Yes, we know he's a great pundit. Yes, we know he's got fantastic ideas. But whether that translates into him being a top-class manager and a manager that can sort of lead Valencia into the top four in the Liga, it remains to be seen. I would be sceptical that he's got the tools to do that right now.
It's a big job for a young manager to take as well, especially really as your first job in a hot seat, going to a club like Valencia where there's plenty of expectation, but you're way off the funding and the quality of players that the likes of Real Madrid and Barcelona and to an extent now Atletico Madrid have in La Liga. It seems right in that, because he's got Phil there as well to support him, he's already got a bit of inside knowledge about the team and he knows what he's getting into, at least then, Paul.
Yeah, who I feel sorry for is probably Gary Neville's wife. If you watch the Salford documentary, you've seen how dedicated Neville gets to things like this and how much he puts his heart and soul into a lot of projects. And Neville's wife was bemoaning the fact that he's got so many side projects on at the moment he never knows what one to focus on. But that just shows some of the dedication in the man, and I don't think he would have taken this job on if he couldn't devote all of his time and effort into making it work. But as you say there, I do agree, it is a bit of a basket case at Valencia with the situation with Peter Lim, the owner, and Jorge Mendes' influence as the agent in the background basically decided on transfer policy. So, yeah, Phil will no doubt have filled him in the details. But if it was as bad as we think, then Phil would surely have told him to stay away and not told him to come and join him at the club. So you'd think there that there's sprouts of positivity for Neville that led him to bring his brother in, and it'll be interesting to see. Yeah, I can't think of any brothers' managerial partnerships in the past, so it'll be interesting to see how this one works out.
It's peculiar as well in this interim manager idea. We've seen Rafa Benitez struggled with that tagline when he was at Chelsea. Sammy, what does an interim manager, that position, does that have an impact on how a manager approaches a job?
I don't necessarily think it would have an impact on how a manager approaches a job. If you're at a club, you should invariably put in 100% into what you're doing anyway, whether you're there on an interim basis or not. But I think from the outside looking in, there's always a degree of uncertainty, isn't there, with that tag. There's always a degree that, until someone else comes along, we'll stick with you.
Yeah, I just don't think when you've got that title hanging over your head, you know that you're not exactly in a safe position or anything like that. So you're almost worried that you're going to be shown the door regardless of however well you do, and whether that affects Gary or not, we'll have to see. And as you say, Paul, it'll be interesting to see the brothers duo at Valencia as well, and seeing if he can immerse himself in the culture. He said he wants to do that already. Staying with Spanish football, the Ballon d'Or announcements were made for the top three front runners on the World Footballer of the Year awards, and of course they come from La Liga, of course they come from Real Madrid and Barcelona, as always. Neymar, Messi, Ronaldo. Paul, you've already made your case that you think Neymar should be the front runner in this one. Sammy, does Neymar have a chance in getting past Messi or Ronaldo, or even just Lionel Messi at the moment, who I think is the complete out-and-out front runner in terms of the judge's decision?
Well, I'd like to think so. I think Neymar he's a fantastic player, a quite fantastic season. But obviously, we know he's not on the list. But I don't know how they've not placed on that list for Luis Suarez. For me, he's probably had the better, outplayed and had a better season than Ronaldo has this year. Whether he's past misdemeanors has counted against him. But I would love to have seen Suarez on that list. I think this year at Barca, he's had a quite breathtaking season. But with the three on the list, I think Neymar can make a great fist of it. He's had a good season. Messi's had been plagued by a few injuries over the past few months. Maybe not hasn't played as much as he would like. So perhaps Neymar's got a chance.
So you think that recent form, Paul, I'd love to know your thoughts on this as well. That recent form that will have a big impact, because it's that what's gone on in the last few months now that makes the kind of final decision in people's minds.
Yeah, we saw that with Ronaldo a few years ago with that sensational performance against Portugal in the World Cup qualifiers, and that was around about this time, and it certainly influenced the votes of people that year that allowed Ronaldo to win it. Listen, I just think the people that are voting for this, the players, the coaches, etc., they look at whether a player can be defined as a genuine superstar as well as everything else. It's almost the entire package of a footballer rather than just their ability on the pitch. And I think Neymar, in the past 12 months, has stepped into that global superstar echelon. I think he's setting himself up perfectly for when Messi perhaps moves further back in the team, perhaps moves back into midfield, or the transfer speculation continues with Man City or PSG are moving on. I just think that Neymar has, in the last 12 months, set himself up to be the heir apparent, to be the best player in the world. And I think we should, given the dominance of Messi and Ronaldo over the award over the last few years, I think we should represent the changing of the guard this year by giving it to Neymar.
And I suppose as well, we noticed that when Messi was out for the last few weeks and recently came back in El Clasico, of course, Barca didn't miss a beat because of the play of Suarez and Neymar in particular. That front three that everybody talks about is very much a trio rather than one man with two other people who he's kind of pulling the strings of. These are two players that can play their own game and take Barca on to a world perhaps without Lionel Messi. As you say, does Ronaldo have a chance in this, because Madrid stumbled last year as well, of course, and Barca the Champions League winners as well, and haven't started as brightly this season as they perhaps could have Real Madrid?
It's Cristiano Ronaldo. Of course, he's got a chance. And let's not forget, it's a great honour to win the Ballon d'Or for any footballer. But let's not forget, there's a lot of politics that are involved in terms of the voting as well. So you never know. Ronaldo just might come out on top.
It'd be interesting to see if Ronaldo's on there. But to me, it's got to be one of the Barca boys. I'm willing to side with Paul slightly more at the moment with Neymar, 14 goals and leading Barca for assists as well in La Liga at the moment. Let's move away from the football and let's talk about what happened last Saturday in Dusseldorf. In the boxing, Tyson Fury beating Vladimir Klitschko, an 11-year undefeated run, finishing finally the IBF WBA and WBO world title fight going Fury's way, the 29-year-old. He's got the world at his feet, might already be stripped, though, of the IBF belt if he doesn't fight Glazkov next, the mandatory challenger, even though Klitschko has said that he wants the rematch that was built into the contract. First and foremost, gentlemen, Sammy, I know you watched the fight last weekend. Klitschko looked completely outboxed last weekend, and full credit to Tyson Fury, of course, who was very much the underdog going into that.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I think in terms of title, it was the most exciting fight I've ever watched. But I think in terms of a game plan and strategy basis, I think you can't fault Tyson Fury and his camp there. They obviously laid out a plan, carried it out, and they reaped the benefits. So, he's now heavyweight champion of the world, perhaps the biggest prize in sports, and Tyson Fury now carries that mantle. But for him to be, we talk about the Ballon d'Or being political, but for him to be stripped of, or being threatened to be stripped of a title, literally just days after he's gone through hell, gone into Vladimir Klitschko's backyard to win the title, and for him to be threatened to be stripped of the title, we just it reeks a little bit for me. Doesn't ring true with me.
Would another fighter that wasn't Fury, perhaps a David Haye, slightly more kind of, I don't want to say Fury's less credible, but Haye has that certain kind of media presence a little bit more than Fury has done. I think Fury has been seen a little bit as a joke recently, especially because of his antics in the press conferences. Do you think a different fighter, Klitschko, would never have to deal with this sort of thing if he was taking the belts off somebody? There are other fighters that wouldn't have to deal with that as well. Is it because it's Tyson Fury that he's being treated like this, do you think?
Yeah, I think there is an element of that too. I think this is... obviously, Fury hasn't exactly got a purist boxing background. So I think that has got an element to do with it. But just on a side issue, sorry to put a damper on things, but the full thing just strikes me of the death of heavyweight boxing. To be perfectly honest, I mean I can't look at it in any other way. I mean, fair play to Fury, honestly, fair play to him. He went into, as Sammy says, he went into Klitschko's backyard and won a points decision, which a lot of people thought might have been a hugely difficult thing to do, but I think it tells me a lot more about the fact that the Klitschkos have dominated the heavyweight boxing scene over the past 10 years, relatively unchallenged. It tells me more about the heavyweight boxing scene in general that Fury can step in and win, rather than the fact that Fury has any kind of real...
This makes it more exciting, though, Paul. We've got a new title holder. We've got somebody that we can now potentially have the belts being unified. We've got David Haye back, and whether you like it or not, he's shouting off his mouth saying he wants a fight against Fury for those titles. He wants to be the man to unite the world titles once more. And you've got someone like Anthony Joshua coming up. Surely this is now that dark cloud of the Klitschkos is going, that dominance is going, and we've got new blood coming through that can perhaps test them, and we might have a few more title exchanges in the next few years.
Yeah, the point I'm making is, though, that the overall standard isn't high. I mean, yes, Fury is going to make it interesting, and he's going to put a legitimate challenge in there, and it's going to open up the scene a little bit to some newcomers, and hopefully when that happens we get a higher level of boxing. But I just think at the moment Fury's victory just rings with me as being indicative of an overall dearth of quality in the heavyweight boxing scene.
Oh, Paul, I can't believe you're being so downtrodden about this after we finally get rid of the Klitschkos on their mantle in the heavyweight boxing world, and finally perhaps with some excitement coming to it, and suddenly it's all been talked about, the quality of the division going down. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few years, and keep an eye on Anthony Joshua, because there's definitely quality in that man, that's for sure. Let's move away to the fast-paced action of the Formula One season that finally came to a head. It's all over. It was already over about a month ago now, with Lewis Hamilton winning his third world championship. It all finished in Abu Dhabi this weekend. Hamilton struggling with the car once more. There's been fractions between he and Nico Rosberg in the Mercedes garage, and Toto Wolff saying that perhaps these two might need to be split up as well. Is that the only way that we're going to make F1 exciting at the moment? Because this season, for me, was one of the most boring F1 seasons, I think, that we've had. Hamilton, 10 wins. Rosberg, 6 wins. Vettel, 3 wins. The only people to stand atop an F1 podium this year, gents.
There's no escaping in terms of, you know, F1. It's a thoroughly, you know, exciting sport. You know, it's but I think that the individuality of it goes out the window, just obviously because of the car. They're fantastic drivers, but you're only as good as, you know, in many ways, as the tools that you've got at your disposal. And, you know, as long as the cars are powerful and as powerful as they are, you know, you're always going to have the same guys on the podium. And perhaps maybe, you know, splitting Rosberg and Hamilton up next season would be a good shout for F1, and just to shake things up a bit, because at the moment, as you say, I can't remember a more sort of, I don't want to say boring, but perhaps a more mundane F1 season than the one we've just had.
Yeah, the memorable moments from the year, I think there aren't many that really stand out, if I'm honest. And it's difficult to sit down for 2 hours and put yourself through a race when you know ultimately it's more than likely going to be Lewis Hamilton atop the podium. There's been talks of things like fake rain being brought in, changing tracks to make them more exciting, more overtaking. We've seen DRS come in and curse, things like that. Does the sport need to grow and change in the same way that we've seen sports like cricket grow and change and adapt to become more exciting? These day-night test series coming in, of course, the 2020 game as well, exploding off as well. Does F1 need to revamp and modernise itself for the more intense, exciting 24-hour news media world, if you will?
I think the problem with it is that over the past couple of years, you've watched fantastic documentaries and films made. I'm referring particularly to Senna and also the Niki Lauda documentary, which hark back to days where, yes, the cars were absolutely unsafe, But it meant that drivers had to push themselves to the absolute limit, and the balance was much more driver ability over car in terms of getting people over the line. And that's why we love Niki Lauda, and that's why we love Ayrton Senna, and we love the rival that he had with Alain Prost. Now, the drivers openly admit themselves that it's 90% car and almost 10% of those abilities. I don't think there's too much between the attributes of the top drivers in F1 at the moment. It's just down to who can get that car tuned up as best as possible during the off season to determine who's going to win next year. And I think that's a disappointing element for fans, because a fantastic driver can just become a mid-carder if his car isn't good enough, and that's quite depressing, I think.
What about the salary cap idea, if you will, that's been floated about, the limit on how much you can put into investment into redeveloping your car?
I think that's always a dangerous. I think that's always a dangerous game in terms of salary caps. It works in some sports, you know, but I think, you know, F1's all about the advancements in technology. We all want to see people, the cars, and you know, drivers go that little bit faster. And I think the only really way you can do that is by pumping money into the technological side. So I think, in terms of a salary cap or a wage cap or a money cap, I think we should be careful about that.
Yeah, it's an idea that's been pros and advantages for those that stay inside the financial kind of limit that is put on car redevelopment, and a little bit more flexibility into it as well. It'll be interesting to see if there are any changes from the FIA as we go into F1's off-season. Lewis Hamilton, though, three-time world champion, all finishing, as I say, in Abu Dhabi this weekend. Finally, gents, we'll finish quite fittingly with two athletes that look like they're calling it a day as well. Tiger Woods has hinted that this back trouble that he's been having, three surgeries now he's had on his back, and there's no real comeback date set for his return to the world of golf. And Kobe Bryant's announcing that he will be retiring from basketball at the end of this year. Two legends in their own right, in their own particular sports. We won't compare these legends, but we will say Kobe's struggling this year. Tiger has dropped now down to, 400 in the world, I think he is now, in the rankings. Is this a point of athletes just sticking around that little bit too long? And rather than being remembered, I think, as these unbelievable athletes, they're now going to go down, not as flops, but there'll be that disappointing tail off to their careers.
That's always the danger, isn't it, Ollie, in terms of how long you prolong your career. I think, back to football, I think we're seeing it now, particularly at Chelsea with John Terry. He's sadly on the wane. When does he call it a day? When do we start remembering him for the player that he was, rather than the player that he is now? There's always that sort of treacherous sort of dividing line, isn't there? Then sort of when you feel you can still go on, and when you should, you know, obviously just call it a day to keep your legendary status.
I mean, you can always go down the Richard Wright option of just being the guy that hangs around forever, but in the background, and every so often gets a substitution appearance at Manchester City, still kicking about, and you can't believe that he's still around in the game of football, and he just crops up every so often. But I mean, Kobe, for instance, has now almost guaranteed himself an all-star appearance, because by announcing his retirement, he's now having this like Kobe parade for the rest of the year. We saw in Philadelphia and Washington the home fans chanting Kobe's name at the end of these games. He'll still go down as a legend. They still will go down as legends. But it is almost embarrassing to watch these guys struggling sometimes when you just think you probably should have stepped away maybe 2 years ago or so. And I think in Tiger's case, with the injuries particularly as well, Paul.
It's funny. It was on the ESPN the other day. It said Kobe's last ever time he'll play in Philadelphia, which it gives you an indication of what we're up against for the next 6 months. It's going to be the last time that Kobe does everything for the last 6 months. But I think there's a fundamental difference between Kobe's situation and Tiger Woods. I think Kobe's going to get this swan song and get this parade through the last season. I think that Tiger Woods cuts a thoroughly forlorn figure these days. I genuinely think I was at the Australian Open here in Sydney at the weekend when Jordan Spieth finished second in the final round. And I honestly don't think that golf needs Tiger Woods now as much as it maybe did 5 years ago. With McIlroy coming through, with Jordan Spieth being such a mercurial talent, I think those kind of names will draw the crowds. And those guys obviously will eventually start to transcend golf the same way that Woods did and bring an even bigger crowd. So, yeah, I think Woods's influence in the game is unquestionable, and it's been fantastic for the game of golf. But I just think, looking at him now, he just doesn't have the heart anymore, and I think he should just step aside whilst we all kind of retain some of those memories of when he was in his pomp.
You think Spieth can be that next Woods? I mean, surely Woods is, there is only one Tiger at the end of the day.
I was at the Australian Open at the weekend, and of an audience of about 13,000 people, about 12,500 people followed Jordan Spieth around the entire day. And that was in a field with Adam Scott, who's one of the most famous Australian sportsmen in it. The draw that he was in that final round was astonishing. And I think Spieth's only 22. He's got years to come. And I genuinely think he's got the ability to become one of the greatest players in the history of golf.
Sammy, that's pretty much like what it's like for you on a match day, isn't it, though? 20,000 people just following you about down the Emirates and places.
Yeah. Not quite.
Gents, a pleasure, as always, to break down some of the top sporting news from the last 7 days or so with you, Paul. Enjoy the rest of your time in Australia, mate. As always, cheers for joining us, man. And Sammy, a pleasure to have you on the show as well. Always appreciate the time, mate.
Thanks, guys.
Top man. Thanks, mate.
Cheers, everybody, for tuning in this week. Remember to catch us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter @20MinuteHit. And we'll be back in 7 days' time with more sporting news. Until then, have a very good one.